It is 9 o'clock, so I'm going to call the meeting to order. Staff, will you call the roll?
Commissioner Blank.
Present.
Commissioner Bloom.
Here.
Commissioner Mitchell.
Here.
Commissioner Reese.
Here.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Commissioner Zanzi.
Here.
Chair Wan.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Here.
Commissioner Mercurimi is here.
You want to go over the changes to the agenda, please?
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. There is one change to the agenda today. On page 14, item 13A, the Moores appeal is postponed. For members of the public that are here to speak today to the Commission, you do need to fill out a speaker slip, which you can find outside the hearing room up top, and indicate which item you are speaking to and whether you are in support or opposition of the staff recommendation. In addition, if you have a cell phone or other electronic device that might interrupt the meeting, if you could please put it into a silent mode or turn it off, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to go to public comment. Public comment is the first half hour of the morning, and each member of the public will get 3 minutes to speak. We do not allow you to combine your time with other speakers. We will take the first 10. I have 8 speaker slips, but if we will only go to a half hour. If there's more speakers that come in, we will hear those individuals just prior to lunch. First speaker is Larry Goodhue, and when you come up, please state your name for the record.
Name is Larry Goodhue. Good morning. One, as a matter of information, when you leave today in the lobby, you might encounter somebody from the Chamber of Commerce or Visitors and Convention Bureau that'll help you check to see if you have any money left in your wallet or have not maxed out your credit cards. And if that's the case, they'll be glad to point you in a direction where you can do that here locally. I want to follow up on the same concept that you attached to the Grand Prix as a post-review of the event, and I'm going to offer some comments relative to yesterday and the Commission as a whole. First of all, I think, Madam Chair, I've attended a number of public meetings over a period of time, and I think you did an outstanding job of the way you've handled this session. It's particularly true also the staff in terms of supporting the protocols. I was particularly encouraged to hear about the workshop that you have scheduled to interface in the marinas up and down the coast and deal with those issues. In terms of more specifics on the marina rebuild plan, I think perhaps the most salient comments and observations came from Commissioner Blank vis-a-vis the mercury. The only thing I would have wanted was a little harder pressing of staff on that almost Times Beach situation. It is noted also another commissioner, I believe he's the one that's absent now, raised the issue of the electrolysis, but I wish you would have pointed out that the raised the question of, well, why do we have it in off-the-chart records in Basin 1 but no place else? Beyond that, quite frankly, I think the commission behaved like a certainly pleasant group of potted plants, and the performance went downhill, so much so that on Monday I'm going to ask the governor and attorney general to take what steps are necessary to put a hold on the permit and to block any DBAW funding pursuant to a thorough review by Department of Boating and Waterways. At issue, number one of my great concerns, of course, is the lack of attention and the cogency the staff paid and the commission paid, or lack thereof, relative to protection of the protected course. Tells me that you did not read the staff report. The staff report clearly indicated that the commission was, the applicant was going to violate that by virtue of putting in removable docks. All right. The Aegis flows 365 days a year, not just on special events. Equally dubious was the claim that there's no problem. You got 700 feet of water where the waterway where the long dock is going to go. That's like saying when you go up to if you go up to LAX, you have no problem. You got 8 lanes. But the fact is, 4 of those lanes go away from LAX.
Madam Chair,
the most right lane.
I believe this item might have been on the agenda earlier in the week, in which case it's not an item appropriate for public comment.
No, it was on yesterday, and once it's been on the agenda, I believe it is acceptable for him to comment. You just can't do it if it's the same day.
This is just
day.
A feedback on the overall.
So I'm going to allow you to continue. Unfortunately, you only have eight seconds left, but you may use your 8 seconds.
Sure. It's like saying, going up the 405, hey, you have 8 lanes, don't worry. You really only have 4, but then also the farthest lane is impacted and cannot be used because of the sediment.
Now you do need to wind up, please.
Thank you. And the last thing, which wasn't touched in just at all, was the evisceration of the dry boat storage trailers, space for the rowing shell trailers, absent which the rowing community comes to an end.
Thank you.
We plan to rip out the terra firma there and put in eelgrass, and there's no location to put those trailers.
Thank you. Brian Cox.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Brian Cox. I represent Jack's Bicycle Center. I'm also an individual. As a small business representative in Long Beach, we support equal access to transportation facilities for pedestrians and cyclists on the Gerald Desmond Bridge. As an individual state and federal taxpayer, I respectfully expect equal access to transportation facilities for pedestrians and cyclists. Please do not treat us as second-class citizens by denying us access to facilities we pay for. I respectfully request that the board require the Gerald Desmond Bridge to be built with cycling and pedestrian facilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mark? Is that Mark Bixby?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you and good morning, commissioners. Welcome back to Long Beach for the third day. We recognize that this topic, the Gerald Desmond Bridge, is not on the agenda, and so we did not call out all the troops, but we have a representative group of speakers to address you about the bridge. As we sit here today, we are 3/4 of a mile from the base of the Gerald Desmond Bridge, 1.5 miles from the summit. And as you leave our city today, if you have not already done so, I would ask you to try and take a drive or a bicycle ride or a walk out so that you're real familiar with the potential views for pedestrians and cyclists. You're gathered here close to the bridge, and we have the opportunity for helping make bicycles and pedestrians have the chance to see this facility. We anticipate that the Port of Long Beach will be coming before you for a final permit for this bridge in the next several weeks or a few months, and we hope that you can feel the support of the cycling community and pedestrian and outdoor community behind this request. I have several supporters in the room, and those of you who are here for bicycling and pedestrian, if you could stand up just briefly. This is a small contingent, and we'd be happy to bring out a larger crowd at the appropriate time if that's necessary, but thank you. What we want you to do is to approve the Port of Long Beach permit. We are in support of this request, but we want you to approve that permit with the condition that it does include bicycling and pedestrian, and hopefully the port will do that in such a fashion that is deserved on a $1 billion brand new infrastructure project. My colleague Alan will briefly touch on the points of law, because you as a public body have a responsibility to help us enforce the law that's on the books, and Al will touch on that in a moment. We believe the law is on our side. We believe the Long Beach City Council and city staff are on our side. And we have yet to get the Harbor Commissioners over the hump and understand the logic of the bike and pedestrian access. But there still is no mandate that occurs. We kind of feel like a David and Goliath struggle, where we're the bicyclist and there's an oncoming truck, and we look for you to help us separate the traffic. Your mission is to look out for existing coastal access and to preserve what's there and to increase access where possible. We believe our goals align with yours, and we ask you to help protect us. We're businessmen, waiters, doctors, lawyers, mothers, bartenders, and we believe in cycling and pedestrian and public access with a passion. So we want to, again, thank you for coming to Long Beach, and as you walk out, you will see the on the side of City Hall the crazy goal, the big, hairy, audacious goal. It says, Long Beach, the most bicycle-friendly city in America. It's a crazy goal, but we need to get there, and we need your help and vision to help us reach that. Thank you very much.
Doug Hutton.
Uh,
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Doug Houghton. I'm General Manager of Harley Marine Services, Southern California. We're a leaseholder on Terminal Island. We have a 15-year lease. We're building a multi-million dollar facility on there as we speak. Part of that facility that we're building, we're including showers, lockers for our employees so they can use alternative means of transportation. All that will kind of be for naught if we don't have a bridge to get these employees the ability to either walk, cycle, or use some other sort of means of transportation to get to work. Our company is an ISO 14001. Our owner, president of our company, it's very important the health and wellness of their employees, of his employees. He's doing everything in his possible to reduce our carbon footprint. We've repowered all our tugboats beyond AQMD standards. We're purchasing a fleet of hybrid cars for LA at this time. We have facilities up and down the West Coast. Seattle's our home port. They've done a great job there of incorporating cycling and pedestrian access throughout the port. I was just up there last week, got to work at 7 in the morning. It's still dark there. You see blinking red lights, little headlights, cyclists on their way to the port, on their way to work. It's a lot colder, a lot darker up there, but they are using it. It's just part of the culture. The same thing with Portland. We just don't have the bike access or the pedestrian access in the Port of L.A. at this time. We have two great, on the Long Beach side here, we have the beach access and the L.A. River Channel bike access that both converge right at the base of the Gerald Desmond Bridge. I envision myself and my employees being able to leave work either at lunch or to and from to use that as a means to get exercise. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Alan Crawford.
I'm Alan Crawford from Long Beach. Commissioners, thank you very much for this opportunity. Mark, I think, indicated his remarks. Did you actually have a document laying in front of you? That summarizes a lot of the points that we think are salient to why a bike and pedestrian facility is appropriate. If you quickly turn to page 6 of that document, you'll see some, I think, startling figures. There are 16,000 employees in the Port of Long Beach and LA combined. There are 6,000 on Terminal Island alone. There are 1,200 boat slips on Terminal Island in the city of Wilmington. Without access across the Gerald Desmond Bridge, there will not be bike and pedestrian access for these people. If you take a look at the next page, you'll actually on the top, you'll see a picture of the last speaker, Doug Houghton, sitting on one of his three-wheelers in the port. Say, Doug is clearly a leader in making the port not just bike-friendly, but truly eco-friendly. The second point that I'd like to make, if you turn to page 10 of this document, you'll see that we've cited a number of authorities associated with the legal reasoning, the legal rationale behind putting in a bike and ped facility. There's DOT, there's California State, there's Federal Highway Authority, and of course, there's the Coastal Commission Act, all of which specify that bike and pedestrian facilities in some cases be considered and in other cases be mandated. If you flip to the next page, page 11, and you look at the top slide there, I think this is the most salient of all of the slides in this particular section. It's a California state code, and it's state code 888. And in this code, it says the department shall not construct a state highway as a highway that will result in severance or destruction of existing major routes for non-motorized transportation. The key here is we've got a route on the Gerald Usman today. This law says if you've got one, you've got to maintain it. And we think this is one of our strongest legal arguments. The other thing that this statute says is that, yes, you can construct an alternate route as well, but that alternate route can't be significantly deviate from the shortest distance possible. If you look at the map on that page, you will see that the route that's proposed tentatively takes you about 3 miles out of the way. So we think that's unacceptable. The next several pages, Caltrans directives, California Coastal Act, of course, it says providing non-motorized circulation within the development is part of the Coastal Commission responsibility. Federal Title IX, path shall be
You're
going
to have to wind up. Your time is up, please.
And then finally, the DOT. So to echo my colleague Mark's comments, we want to see the bridge permitted, and we want to see it with the bicycle facility. Thank you so very, very much.
Gabriel Weeks.
Good morning. My name's Gabrielle Weeks. I rode my bicycle down here today. I actually bought it from Jack's, too. I have a letter here that I was going to give to Vanessa so she can give everybody a copy in support of keeping the bike and pedestrian access for the Sierra Club. Our senior director for the entire Sierra Club of the Nation has written this at my request. A lot of our people use that bicycle bridge that is on there right now on a continuous coastal ride. And this will interrupt it. And you know, the legal aspect, apparently we're not supposed to be forced to go through 4 miles out of our way. But also there's no view if we go up and around the whole area. The speaker before me had some very powerful numbers there. With all those the boat dock renters and the employees at the port, if just 10% of them rode a bicycle, that's a whale of a lot of people that would make use of this bridge. So I'll give this letter to Vanessa. I just ask that you please mandate that our port do this as they rebuild. They're sending it out for bids right now. And if afterwards they sort of interject haphazardly some bike and pedestrian access, it's not going to be as good as if it really from the beginning of the design was there. And so far the port has said they'll really sincerely look into doing it and think they hope they might be able to. But that's like me saying I hope I might be able to do 55 on the freeway. That's no requirement. We need it to actually, or me saying, I think I might be able to make my mortgage payment on time, hopefully, maybe. I'll see what I can do. We need this thing to be really required, really mandated, or it may not happen. And I'd hate to lose that because we've got this continual access from one end of California to the other. And I think it would be very sad to have it interrupted here in my hometown. And since the port, after hearing from all these bike advocates for months, has really not said they will do it. They'll just look into seeing if they can. I need somebody to please be the authority to step in and mandate that we keep the pedestrian bicycle access this is there right now. Thank you so much.
Tom Duval.
Good morning. My name is Tom Duval. I'm a member of the Long Beach Cyclists, and I would like to comment on the need for a separated bike lane on the Gerald Usman Bridge. Long Beach Cyclists is a local bicycling advocacy, education, and community organization with a 16-year history in this area. Many of our members are recreational cyclists like myself, but a significant number use cycling as their primary source of transportation, often by choice. We are disappointed that cyclists' rights have been ignored by not including a Class 1 separated bike lane in the plans for the Gerald Usman Bridge. We firmly believe that this improvement, which is supported by law, should be part of the initial bridge plan and not be deferred for later consideration, which may never occur and which would most certainly be more costly. Cyclists who live in our community have the right to commute and recreate safely. Recent surveys show that many adults don't ride a bike because of fear of motorists. A separated bike lane on this bridge would help allay these fears and encourage people to give cycling a chance and to live a more healthful lifestyle. Every time I drive over the bridge, I'm struck by the beauty of our coastline and the dynamic complexity of our port. I believe that a separated bike lane would showcase these assets and provide safe passage for those who wish to pedal rather than pollute. Thank you very much.
Donald Moore.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Donald Moore, and I too bought a bike from Jack's many years ago. I rode it here to this meeting when I was working before I retired. I rode it almost every day to and from work. And I am very much in favor of a Class 1 separated bike lane on this bridge. I've ridden in this city for many years. I don't know if it is the world's, America's most friendly bicycle city, but it is getting better. There are a great many health benefits on riding a bicycle. Bicycles also cut down wear and tear on the infrastructure. They leave a lot more room on the highways for other vehicles. There's less parking space needed. They cut down our need for imported oil. They help clean up the atmosphere. They help with obesity and our health benefits. There's tremendous benefits for people riding bicycles. Also, the state and federal laws require that you at least maintain the level of bicycle facilities you have on the current Gerald Desmond Bridge. I, too, would like to see a separated facility. I believe you gentlemen are for it, and I'm encouraging you to continue to petition that this facility be put on the bridge. But today's roads are not as safe as they should be, and certainly this bridge would be almost impassable without a separated facility on it. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd encourage you to work hard to get that separated facility on this bridge. Thank you very much.
Alan Alessio.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Alan Alessio. I've been a resident of Long Beach since 91. I've been a bicycle rider in Long Beach since 91. I feel that I use the bridge quite often. We have bicycle rides to go to to the ports and so forth, and we use it at least once a month. We travel the roads in the ports right now, and to get rid of this bridge or not have this access anymore would really not really work that well for us and for me personally. We need to have these. We can't be going back. We're supposed to be a friendly bicycle town, and we're progressing and building infrastructure for that. If we don't allow this access, we're going backwards. So please consider that. Thank you.
Jeff Edwards.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Edwards. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the new commissioners that have just been seated. I'm a real estate developer from San Luis Obispo, and I wanted to take a moment this morning to introduce your commission to an exciting new project. You may know the South County of San Luis Obispo includes several cities and the community of Oceano, which is in the unincorporated area. Wedged between Highway 1, Arroyo Grande Creek, and the ocean is a wonderful community called Oceano. And the natural beauty is great. The history is rich. It's a south-facing location, fantastic spot. Community of Oceano has water and sewer availability. So it's a great property. Presently, it's the San Luis Obispo County Airport. It's an underutilized airport, and in fact, I would submit that it's become obsolete. It's about 59 acres, again, as I explained, nestled right next to the ocean. And a conversation is starting in the community right now regarding the reuse of this property for mixed-use purposes. It is in your original area of original Coastal Commission jurisdiction. And so there's the potential for wetland restoration, improve the drainage substantially in the community, and I'll go to that in a minute, improve traffic circulation, create pedestrian bikeway paths to the ocean, some affordable housing, visitor-serving opportunities by way of hotels, and most importantly, a stimulus for the local economy and the creation of jobs. I don't know if you're aware, but in late December, Oceano experienced quite a bit of flooding. And the airport is at 14-foot elevation, and a lot of the manholes and the collection system for their sanitary sewer system is below that level. So what happened on December 19th is that surface waters flowing off the airport inundated the South County Sanitation District facility, and unfortunately there was a release of several hundred thousand gallons of raw sewage in the area. So there's flooding and infrastructure limitations in this area, and I think a redevelopment of the airport site would go a long way in accomplishing that. I'd like to wrap up just by saying that the community conversation is just beginning, and hopefully in the not-too-distant future, we may have another visit with your commission. Thank you very much.
That completes public testimony for this morning. I do have another speaker slip that just came in. That will be taken, and we will hear the remaining speakers just prior to the time we leave today. Now, I have some comments from commissioners. Commissioner Mercurimi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. In response to the substantial public comment regarding bicycle and pedestrian access, I think they are absolutely spot on in tagging along the comments from Peter Douglas, Director Peter Douglas, yesterday in signaling to Long Beach and the port about the Gerald Desmond Bridge, that even though that project is not yet before us, I think it is a healthy reminder that this is a standard that I think this body looks forward to seeing that the city lives up to. And then I think that the trend across California and, as rightly point out, in the northwest of the United States, we are becoming, in this nation, finally, very focused in looking at a complete streets model. And the complete streets model is delineated by the idea that when there is any substantial restoration of our streets, that part of that restoration include, not as an afterthought, but as a primary as a primary vision, that those streets are not necessarily restored, rehabbed, or rebuilt simply just for the private automobile or even just for transit itself, but also for bicyclists and for pedestrians. And I think that the testimony here today is consistent with what my observations have been in the last few days of being here in Long Beach. One is, I want to compliment Long Beach on their bike sharing program. I couldn't help noticing while I was walking around that that's a cool thing to do. And I know that there are other cities in California who are vigorously looking at that program as well. Second, that with such a strong, concentrated downtown, and where you have people who are obviously commuting to work downtown, then I would also encourage the advocates here and perhaps government officials to seriously consider adopting an ordinance called a commuter benefit ordinance, so that the private sector can get the tax benefit from the IRS by subsidizing the commute of workers downtown that would include mass transit and potentially riding your bicycle. It's a win-win. It reinforces the government, local government's obligation that they would build more bike lanes, potentially more pedestrian access, and the employers get to say they're bike cool, and the employees get to say that they're happy, and then there's literally no cost because it is still an IRS deduction to the private sector if they access it. But what surveys have shown over the last few years, the private sector is not utilizing this IRS benefit. But we're noticing a great nexus that by the private sector doing just that, it forces local government to then commit to the enhancement of bicycle pathways. Now there's even dedicated bike lights that are installed companion to the normal street lights for automobiles. And I think that this is more than just the wave of the future. This is going to be a staple, I think, of proper infrastructure planning. So I hope that the comments here today are well heard by the port, by the city of Long Beach, so that when it comes before us, it's not considered a footnote just how important the installation of bike and pedestrian access is into the larger schematic that will come eventually soon. Thank you.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I congratulate the residents of Long Beach for having the goal of making Long Beach the most bicycle-friendly city in the United States. our own city of Oceanside is also striving for that goal, so we'll see who gets there first. I've had the opportunity to attend the International Livable Cities Conference once in Portland, which also claims to be the most bicycle-friendly city. And bicycle-friendly cities, including separated bike paths, is one of the goals of the organization. Certainly, coastal public access and public views are important issues of the Coastal Act. As Commissioner Riccarimi explained, our executive director, Peter Douglas, did address the need for pedestrian and bicycle elements for the Desmond Bridge. So I thank you for your comments.
Commissioner Bloom.
I'd like to join my colleagues in underscoring the importance of this issue. And as the the mayor of another city contending for most bicycle-friendly city, I'd just like to say I really appreciate that our neighbors down the coast are enthusiastically approaching this issue. And I certainly agree it's the issue of connectivity and access is critical to success of bike and pedestrian programs, and I look forward to seeing this issue come back with the goal of enhancing both of those.
Commissioner Blank.
Through the chair, acting executive director Lester, I think you might be getting a sense from commissioners here that this is an issue that when we do see, we might have been a bit easier if the staff had taken a position to the city or whoever's the responsible authority
port.
That this is not an option.
Port.
The port, I'm sorry. And can you inform us or do you know about the status of the discussion with the port?
Yes, generally, I know that we've been talking to the port for some time now about the design issues on the bridge, including most recently this question that Director Douglas spoke to the other day, indicating that we would like to see the bike path incorporated into the design and construction of the bridge. And I imagine that's going to be a fundamental issue when this gets finally decided at the local level and is subject to the appeal process.
And it's certainly within staff's authority and to propose to the commissioners when we see it in the staff report to make it a condition, correct?
I don't know all the details of the standard of review in this area, but yes, I would imagine that that's going to be on the table.
And I just want to make sure, I think you have a sense of the commission. Is that correct?
I do, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Bloom.
I want to be very careful. I very much appreciate Commissioner
right,
Blank's comments, but I want to be careful that we're not getting out in front of the commission when we say what the sense of the commission might be when we have a matter that's not agendized. And there may be other commissioners who feel differently. I just think we need to, if it's possible to have it agendized so that we could get a sense of the commission, I think that would be great. Clearly, some of us have spoken today and expressed some pretty strong opinions about this, but I just want to respect everybody.
I've seen Executive Director Douglas get a sense of the commission with one commissioner. So,
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, because I'm concerned when that happens.
Well, and if I may, Madam Chair, we are working with the port, and I don't know what those conversations will yield, but it may be that this issue comes forward in a way that everyone supports. So that's yet to be seen.
I'm going to just make a comment that I'm in agreement with Commissioner Bloom in the sense that we need to be careful to not prejudge the outcome of a public hearing and an application. On the other hand, it is certainly appropriate for commissioners to express their support for the concept of bicycle-friendly and pedestrian-friendly means of travel and the importance of that to public access. So it does not necessarily say specifically what we will or will not do with regards to a particular project and a particular application, but clearly we are here to support and uphold the Coastal Act, which does require public access. Commissioner Zanzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to speak to Mr. Bixby or the gentleman that had the little remote camera here. Is funding an issue for this project as far as a Class 1 bikeway inclusion in this bridge project? Has that been an obstacle with the harbor or the Port Authority?
Thank you. I believe funding is an issue for the Port of Long Beach. They have adequate funding, they believe, to build the bridge. They have identified their targeted 950-ish million, 114 million of which the Port of Long Beach is providing. The other 88%, us folks in this room, our California taxpayers, state taxpayers are providing. They have raised the issue of having a bicycle and pedestrian path as an additional cost. And looking backwards at a later date, when we put pressure on the port, they said, well, we think it might cost as much as $48 million to install this bike and pedestrian facility. I would say our group believes that there is a significant cost to having a bike and ped facility, but it's not $48 million. Our group also feels that the port has known about the need to include bicycle and pedestrian facilities for over a decade. It's been lobbied for on behalf of the City of Los Angeles since 2002, the Bicycle Advisory Committee. In 2007, the director of Caltrans District 7, Doug Failing, stated that they would mandate pedestrian access on the bridge. So this is not a new issue, and although we've come out of the woodwork in the last several months when we realized that...
I'm going to interrupt this. We cannot have a hearing on this item. This is not an agendized item. And as I try to explain, this commission will see this. We need to go through all of these issues in a legally agendized hearing and make our determinations based on all sides being present and having a right to have a say. So I'm going to say I think that we have covered this subject sufficiently.
Okay. No, we respect that. Thank you. And we'll be happy to come back and address this whenever it's appropriate. So thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, I'll go to staff, and let's continue with the meeting.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This morning, as the new year begins, we wanted to give you a short update on our work on the LCP program, just to give you some background information, particularly for some of the new commissioners. As you know, LCPs, local coastal programs, are the primary mechanism that we use to implement the resource protection policies of the Coastal Act. And the significant amount of your staff's work is spent on implementing LCPs, including both monitoring local permitting decisions by local governments with certified LCPs, as well as working on LCPs through the LCP amendment process and updates themselves. So we spend a significant amount of time on those, and we have a brief report in your packet from last night that gives you some background information. For example, most of the LCPs that we work with have been certified originally in the early 1980s. We see about 50 to 80 LCP amendments in any given year, so it's a substantial amount of work. The other interesting thing to note is that about 88% of the coastal zone has a certified LCP, so the vast majority of your jurisdiction is governed by a certified LCP. In terms of implementing the program and working with local governments, many of you will remember we had a workshop in August of 2009 that the League of Cities and the California Association of Counties helped us put together to talk about the LCP process and improving communication with local governments. And there was a public dialogue between the commission and local officials about various issues around making the LCP process work more effectively. After that workshop, we came back to you with a short report about some of the things that we might be able to do to push that effort forward, enhancing communication, and there's a summary of some of those tasks in the short report, but briefly wanted to let you know that out of that workshop came a commitment from both the commission and staff and local governments to continue the dialogue through this League of Cities process. So we've met three times since the workshop with the local government working group that we've established. That includes representatives from the League and CSAC and some professional staff from local governments to cover some of the more technical issues. We do have another meeting coming up in February 3rd, and those meetings have helped us push along some of the questions that we want to work together on with local governments. Some of the things we've done through that process, we coordinated the local review of another guidance document that staff prepared on updating implementation plans of LCPs, and that guide is now on our website, available for local governments. We've been working on developing better communication tools, particularly electronic email type, message mechanisms that we can use to communicate the commission's work and issues for local government more effectively. We are still working on updating the LUP guide, which is something we've had on our website since 2007 and provides general guidance and examples to local governments about issues they should be aware of and how to take on certain issues during an update. And then there are several other tasks we're continuing to work on. Another issue we wanted to highlight was simply some of the ongoing LCP coordination and work that each district staff is doing. And I wanted to highlight this in particular because you often see through LCP amendments, such as the Santa Barbara hearing we had in November, lots of issues and sometimes conflict and concerns about process, but there's also a lot of process happening that you don't see. And that some of that is summarized in this report. We've established quarterly meetings with many local governments to identify priorities and discuss issues that are coming up. We're working directly on many LCP updates. So I wanted to highlight that for you as well. And then finally, there's a short summary of some of the major LCP items that you might see in the coming year, and there's quite a few. If you see that list of bullets, we've got many, many LCP amendments pending, ranging from comprehensive updates in Sonoma and Marin counties to project-driven amendments in various jurisdictions to specific LCP amendments that you're going to see. So I just wanted to give you that brief overview, and if you have any questions, I can address them now, but you can anticipate us coming forward with continuing to come forward with LCP work and also working with the League and CSEC to try to identify ways that we can work more generally to improve the process and with tools and new mechanisms. It is challenging. Last year was very challenging with the furloughs and other staff reductions, but we're trying to prioritize this and make this one of our primary objectives is to enhance the LCP process given its fundamental role in what you guys do. So that's it.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments by commissioners?
Just one comment. I just, as a representative of local government, that's very much appreciated your efforts and streamlining the process for us at the local level.
Thank you. With that, we'll continue.
Thank you. The North Central Coast District does not have any items to report this month. Though I would mention that there's quite a bit of emergency permit activity underway in the city of Pacifica on those high bluffs that we've talked about before. So you'll be seeing some major issues probably sometime mid-year on those questions. The Central Coast Deputy Director's Report. We have one emergency permit to report with San Luis Obispo County Department of Public Works that we issued. There are no other minor items that need the Commission's concurrence. That would bring us to item 7.
Any objection to the Commission finding concurrence? Seeing none, the Commission has concurred.
Item 7A is a City of Pismo Beach LCP amendment time extension, and we do have a LCP amendment submitted concerning open space landscaping, and we need a little further time to complete our review of that. So we are asking that the Commission extend the 60-day time limit on processing that amendment for up to 1 year. Of course, I would anticipate it coming much sooner than that.
Commissioner Rees.
The City of Pismo Beach has no problem with extending this.
Can I get a motion?
I move that the Commission extend the time limit to act on Pismo Beach Local Coastal Program Amendment Number I-1-10, Part 1, to January 29, 2012.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Rees, seconded by Commissioner Bloom. Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the Commission has extended the time.
So next, in Central Coast, there are three appeals, and they are all concerning solar array projects from the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I would like to present them in two different presentations. The first one that we are discussing, we are recommending a substantial issue on, so I'd like to do that separately, and then the other two as a combined hearing. So there is a PowerPoint. It's on the screen now. This is item 8A, and this is concerning Baywood Elementary solar arrays in the community of Los Osos. San Luis Obispo County approved a coastal development permit authorizing construction of four solar arrays totaling approximately 9,000 square feet at Baywood Elementary School in the community of Los Osos. Two of those arrays would be installed on the roofs of carport structures, and two others would be freestanding. If you could go to the next slide, please. This is shows you the location of Baywood Elementary in the urban area of Los Osos near Morro Bay. The structures, as I said, would be slightly tilted and have a height of approximately 12 to 15 feet at their tallest point. The project also includes two cypress trees being removed and the trimming of five ornamental landscape trees for solar access. The appellants have contended here that the county approval is inconsistent with policies in the LCP concerning environmentally sensitive habitat, visual and scenic resources, archaeology, and grading. Next slide. This is an aerial view of the site of the school, and on this plan you can see two of the solar arrays would be installed in existing paved parking lot areas, numbers 1 and 4, and the other two solar arrays, 2 and 3, would be placed within a seasonal drainage that is located on the southwest corner of the site, right there. In terms of the two solar array carport structures proposed for the paved parking lot areas, these areas would be constructed in an area that is not ESHA and where they would not have significant impacts on coastal resources otherwise, in our view. And we don't believe that this part of the county's approval raises a substantial issue with the LCP. Next slide. With respect to the issues generally, visual and scenic resources. Based on a review of detailed artist renderings prepared for the project, the solar arrays located in the parking lots are consistent with the provisions of the LCP concerning the protection of scenic resources. Baywood Elementary School is located in an already developed urban area, and the proposed carport structures with attached solar arrays are only marginally visible by passersby. These structures are generally low profile and consistent with the look and character of the parking lot and the existing school buildings around them. Now, placement of the carport structure and the arrays do not block any views to the shoreline, nor do they silhouette into the skyline with the public view shed. Next slide. This is another artist rendering of what the proposed array would look like in the parking lot. We don't believe the visual issues in the appeal raise a substantial issue. There's also an archaeology contention, and I would point out that the county did find the project consistent with the LCP, based on a Phase 1 surface survey which found no archaeological resources, and there is nothing in the file or other information would indicate that there's an inconsistency here, thus no substantial issue. Issue number 3 concerns grading, and again, the impacts here are minimal. There would be grading limited to the digging of small footings for the carport array structures. Ground disturbance, vegetation removal, and other landform alteration is minimized, and therefore, again, no substantial issue is raised. The next slide, please. The main issue raised by this appeal concerns the protection of ESHA, and in this case, two of the solar array structures are proposed to be located within a drainage basin where we have evidence of wetland indicators, both willow plants and hydrology likely present. However, there was not a formal wetland delineation here. In addition, the drainage basin also may qualify as terrestrial habitat for the Morro shoulder-band snail. And again, that's due to patches of small trees and scrub-type vegetation that occurs along the sides of the basin. So lacking evidence to the contrary, we do believe that there is a substantial issue raised by the project's consistency with the ESHA policies of the Act. And at this time, unless three or more commissioners would like to discuss substantial issue, I would suggest you make that finding and move to the de novo portion.
Are there three or more commissioners who wish to hear the question of substantial issue? Seeing none, the commission has found substantial issue, and we will move to the de novo hearing.
So with respect to the de novo hearing on the question, again, we believe the only real issue here is the one of ESHA, and we are recommending a special condition that addresses that directly, which would require the removal of the two arrays from this location. The school district, the applicant, is in agreement with our recommended condition. It may be that they come back in the future with an alternative location for additional arrays, but at this time they're in agreement with modifying the project to remove the arrays from the potential ESHA area. And that would be the main condition of our approval. This would also avoid the need for the removal of the cypress trees in this area, so those issues are removed also from contention. As conditioned, we believe the project would be in conformance with the certified LCP, and we recommend that you approve the CDP with those conditions that are recommended. The motion and recommendation are found on page 3 of the staff report.
Any ex parte communications starting on my right, Commissioner Blank? And I had on the 4th of the month at 3:45, I had a phone call from Andrew Christie of the local Sierra Club, and he said they are in favor of solar arrays, but the problem is the district has put them on carports because they can't put them on the roofs for a variety of reasons, so they have to cut down the trees. If they used a different solar technology, they could put them there, but they had no problem with item 8A, but he was speaking to me about both. On the other two, the issue is not the location so much of the carport of the solar arrays, but the fact that where they are going in requires tree removal, and they do not believe that the mitigations for the planting of the trees are conditioned to protect the Moro shoulder band snail, and the only way the commission can add conditions is to find substantial issues. I realize this is for the next two items, but it was one conversation. Anyone to my left? Okay, with that, we will open the public hearing, and I'll go to David Foote. Mr. Foote, if you could state your name for the record and then tell me how long you will need for your presentation.
My name is David Foote with Firma Consultants. I probably will not take 3 minutes. With your permission, I'd like to reserve some of my time to respond to any of the appellant's comments, if that's possible.
Okay, I'm going to give you 3 minutes, and then I'll give you another 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Wonderful. I'm representing today San Luis Coastal Unified School District on their district-wide solarization project. This is a project that encompasses all the schools in their district, two cities, and then one town in county jurisdiction. The items you have under appeal here are the three schools in Los Osos. I really just want to thank staff for first meeting with me to take a very careful and thorough process of understanding the project, understanding the administrative record, the 8 or 10, actually probably about 12 technical reports and memorandums that are in the record related to coastal resources. It was a good process. I think they came to the right conclusion. The district is in support or agreement with a special condition to take the array panels out of the stormwater basin. So that is basically my presentation, and thank you for the time to come up again. Thanks.
Thank you. Julie Tacker. And when you come forward, would you state your name for the record, and will you let me know what you need for your presentation?
I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and you needed how much time?
How much time, yes.
I could probably go in maybe 5. Let's give myself 5.
We'll give you 5 minutes.
Billy, thank you. I do have a short PowerPoint. I'm Julie Tacker from Los Osos. Los Osos is all ESHA. Our LCP recognizes ESHA and protects it throughout our community. Advance the slide, please. I support solar energy distributed, including distributed generation. I also support San Luis Coastal Unified School District's pursuit to defray operating expenses. I support staff's recommendation for substantial issue. However, I do not support solar carports as the optimal means of distributed generation. Next. I think we might have an old, this is the wrong PowerPoint. That's okay. If you'll go on, we'll see. This is a typical carport solar array. It's industrial in its nature, it's metropolitan like, and it's nothing like anything we've seen in our coastal area or in the coastal zone. This is the wrong PowerPoint, I'm sorry. Billy, if you'll just flash and I'll do the best I can. This was the one presented to the county. If you'll stop there for a moment. The visual simulation here shows a tree on the right-hand side that, yes, is a pine, a considered ornamental, but that is currently, that tree is twice the size of what they're depicting here. And the point being that that is a visual impact, and it's not, I don't know that the tree trimmer or topping of the tree is going to come out as artistic as how this visual simulation shows. Advance again. This is the basin. We are all in agreement that the basin is special. Unfortunately, the district cut down willow trees. This is interesting. This is a solar rooftop panel in an installation in San Diego on a school. It can be put, these solar arrays could be put on rooftops, and I don't think we'd be here today if the school district was proposing rooftop installations. This is the entire school site. We'll go on. Just back to quickly, who cares? You did see that the school district, the project was also appealed by the Sierra Club. Our local grand jury supports rooftop installations, and former City Councilwoman from Morro Bay has written to your commission that should be in the file concerning the precedent-setting effects of the solar carports in the coastal zone. I'm sorry, this is the wrong PowerPoint. I would say that you may not realize that this school is just a few blocks outside the small-scale neighborhood of Baywood Park. And so maybe we are not talking about visual impacts to the bay, but it is a thoroughfare that the school is on that takes you right to the bay and the small-scale community of Baywood Park. I think we're finished with that one. Okay, yeah, this was the wrong PowerPoint. I'm sorry. Much of my concerns raised in the appeal mentioned grading, and not the grading for the footings of the solar arrays was I concerned about, but more the grading for the tree replacement. We're replacing it 2-to-1, which I support, but where those trees are going has not been determined, and I believe the county's condition is incomplete, and that condition runs throughout the three projects, so I'll be back to talk about that. I thank you for your time.
Jeff Edwards. And you'll have 3 minutes, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. I've been a resident of Baywood Park in Los Osos for over 30 years, and it's my belief that the use of carports to establish solar arrays is a bad idea, and I think it has considerable precedential aspects to it in the coastal zone. From a procedural standpoint, and this goes to both this application and the subsequent matters, when one wants to start a project in our community, the first thing we do, because of the ESHA status and because of the endangered or threatened moral shoulder band snail, the very first thing on any project is that we have an invertebrate ecologist come out and do either a habitat assessment or a full protocol survey for this snail. And the school district's applications in the community of Los Osos have been absent any involvement of an invertebrate ecologist. And I'd like to raise a question of equal protection. And being a member of the development community, we're held to a very high standard. And it appears that at the county level, and there was a governmental courtesy provided to the school district, and I think that's inappropriate. I'll close by just encouraging your board to actually continue this de novo hearing to a subsequent date to have staff analyze the true potential of the precedential effects of this project and perhaps bring this back at a subsequent date with the other two matters that will be trailing this item and have a de novo on all and a look at the broader policy issues. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Foote, you want to respond? And you'll need to state your name for the record again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Foote with FIRMA. I just want to begin by pointing out that the Board of Trustees for the school district has to take into account the public interest when they make these decisions about how to implement a very ambitious and I think innovative project to solarize their whole school district. The subject of where the arrays could feasibly be put was on the agenda for at least five or six school board hearings. The record clearly shows they deliberated and made the decision to use the carport approach based on financial issues primarily, which would have long-term effects on the school district related to maintenance, roof replacement, liability issues, structural situations with older school buildings. There were a myriad of reasons why carports were selected. I think that the visual simulations that were presented to you clearly show that a carport, with or without a solar panel, is not a obtrusive or incongruent element within a small community. They could be built on a single family lot. They are all the time. I'm just not sure that I would follow the reasoning on why they're so visually obtrusive. The San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors unanimously denied the appeal on this matter, specifically related to the visual finding. They were very clear that they did not feel there was a visual issue. Regarding ESHA, just want to point out that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was involved in the county permit process. They were contacted by county staff and by us. We were relying on a 1997 letter basically saying it was not habitat, and the service decided that that letter was outdated. As a result, we have this particular condition of approval, which does not any longer apply to your action today, but I'm giving you background. On the basis of that, the district went ahead and began a protocol survey for presence-absence of snails for the basin and recently completed it. It's now going to the service for their concurrence. They found absence, no snails present. Again, that question is not germane with special condition number one for this permit. That habitat would not be impacted in any case. But I give you this background to just emphasize that the school district has taken a very thorough approach to analyzing the issues and their options. So thank you for your time.
With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Yes, any thank comments? You. Just a couple. One, the standard of review here is the county's LCP, and we've evaluated this project the way we evaluate all projects on appeal in this jurisdiction. Subject to the LCP. Second, as I said, there are no ESHA issues now that we've conditioned the proposed conditioning the project to remove the two arrays from the potential ESHA area. The other two arrays are in developed parking lots, and so there are no habitat issues. Third, with the special condition, there's no tree removal in this project, so those questions, to the extent there may be a question about what happens with tree removal and replacement, that's not an issue in this case. And finally, we don't believe there are any visual impacts of concern here in this urban area, and that there are not any inconsistencies with the LCP policies with respect to scenic and visual resource protection. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll return to Commission. Commissioner Reese.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit number A3SLO10-053 pursuant to the staff recommendation. A yes vote is recommended.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Reese, seconded by Commissioner Bloom. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yeah.
Commissioner Bloom?
No, thank you. I think staff has covered it.
Is there any need for a roll call? Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the Commission has approved the project as conditioned by the staff. Well, now we'll go on to 8B and C, which I think we're taking as a combined.
Yes, I'll just run quickly through the slides for both here. These, again, items 8B and 8C are appeals of solar array projects by the school district and San Luis Obispo Coastal Unified School District in Los Osos, and we are recommending no substantial issue on both of these appeals. Quickly going through the first set of slides. Next slide, please. This again is the overview, and here you can see on here both the Monarch Elementary School site highlighted, which is one of the appeals, and then over to the right, the black square will be the other appeal. Next slide. This is again a layout of the Monarch School and the proposed locations of the arrays. You can see that they are located in developed parking areas with carport structures. Next slide. These are some renderings of what the arrays would look like. There would be some tree trimming and tree removal in this case concerning ornamental trees in and around the parking area. Next slide. Again, another visual simulation of what the carport array might look like. Next slide. This is just another view of some of the existing vegetation on the site. Next slide. And again, where some of the trees might be trimmed, giving you an idea of the parking lot landscaping trees that may be affected. Next slide. Okay, and to the other presentation. So the issues raised in both of these appeals are the same as the issues that were raised in the prior appeal, protection of ESHA, scenic resources, archaeology, and grading. Next slide. This is the other site, Los Osos Middle School site. Next slide. Here is an overview of the site plan there, and again, you can see the arrays would be located in existing developed parking areas. Next slide. This is a simulation coming down towards the school site. It is scenic in the background, but we don't see a significant visual intrusion here. Next slide. Again, a simulation and indicating some of the trees that would be trimmed and or removed. Next slide. And then again, another shot of the parking landscape trees to be removed by the project. I believe that's the last slide. So in terms of the issues raised on appeal, again, we don't believe that there are any significant environmentally sensitive habitat issues here, and I'll come back to that in a minute, nor are there any significant visual issues or inconsistencies with the LCP in terms of impacts to public views or blocking public views to and along the ocean. These are all in developed urban an urban area. With respect to archaeology, the second appeal does have a potential issue, but both of the projects had phase one surveys and resources were identified on the site of the second project. The middle school site and the conditions imposed by the county with respect to that project, we believe, are adequate to address that issue and make a finding of consistency with the LCP. The resources are likely already capped. There will be a required monitor on site, including a Native American consulting monitor, if in the event that any resources are identified. So we believe the archaeology issue has been addressed in both cases adequately. With respect to grading, again, there's minimal grading associated with the footings of the carport structures themselves. And to the extent there may be ground disturbance related to the tree removal and replacement, first, on that issue, we don't believe any of the trees in these cases constitute ESHA or raise habitat issues. There is the monarch site is near potential monarch habitat. There has been survey, and you have included in your staff report an extra survey study that was done for monarch butterfly habitat in that case. There were no butterfly habitats identified in the trees. With respect to tree replacement, there is a fairly rigorous tree replacement condition in both permits, which would require 2-to-1 replacement. And as you've already heard, the district has been working closely with Fish and Wildlife on where that tree replacement may occur and whether or not there would be any potential snail habitat issues. There's a condition that requires those trees to be located in appropriate sites, and the district and county have agreed that that condition includes addressing that potential habitat sighting issue, and there is a letter in your packet from the district recently making clear that they understand that's the commitment in the project to work closely with Fish and Wildlife and assure that any tree replanting would not occur within any identified snail habitat. So with those evaluations of the various LCP constraints and the additional information in your record, we are recommending no substantial issue for both of these appeals.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Mine are on file. My discussion on the first issue included my discussion with Mr. Christie on this issue as well, and which dealt with the concerns about the tree replacement. With that, I will open the public hearing, and this is a substantial issue question, and I will go to the appellant first, Julie Tacker, and you have 3 minutes.
I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I do have a few slides. I would ask that you find substantial issue on both projects. The Monarch Grove Elementary School displaced monarchs when the school was built some 20 years ago. The school, as you see there, that's the fence that is the western border of the school, and there's a sign that says Montaña de Oro, 3.5 miles away, Montaña de Oro, being an 8,000-acre coastal resource that I hope you've all been to. Next slide, where you will enjoy vistas such as these. That is the gateway from our community. Monarch Grove Elementary School is the last thing. It's really the last bit of the urban area that you see before you approach the state park. Next. The visual simulations, again, do not show all trees to be trimmed or removed. My biggest issue is the tree replacement condition is inadequate. I have not seen the letter from the school district that says that they're willing to comply with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. My preference is that you find substantial issue, go to de novo at a future time when we can talk about this precedent-setting issues related to putting carports in the coastal zone, and let's talk about this tree replacement mitigation when we're talking 2-to-1. The two schools combined, we're talking about 42 trees being replaced somewhere in the community. That has not been identified, whether they are on-site or off-site. The condition is ambiguous. And if we're going to be in Los Osos at all, we already know we are in ESHA. The entire community is ESHA. There has not to my knowledge, been the snail surveys done that Mr. Foote suggested were done at Baywood on these other schools. The next slides will go on to Los Osos Middle School. Los Osos Middle School, if we'll go back, Bill, just a second, is surrounded by greenbelt. This is prime Esha on the eastern sides of the property. It is very likely we will find shoulder band snail throughout that school. As far as the archaeological resources, we know they are there, and we can talk about them more in the de novo that I hope we go to if you find substantial issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. David Foote, if you would come forward, state your name for the record. And no, there's only 3 minutes per side for a substantial issue hearing. Right. Sorry about that. If you'd state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
David Foote with Firma, representing San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I want to begin again. This is a public agency. The school district is accountable. They're an elected body. They are not going to go out on a limb regarding the Endangered Species Act. As I mentioned before, it is recognized that much, if not the greater part, of Los Osos is potential snail habitat and endangered species. The way the condition is written allows us to participate with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We've had an array of discussions with them. In their initial consultation with the county, the service did not identify either Monarch Grove or Los Osos Middle School as likely habitat. They didn't see this as an issue. There's no condition in the county's permit related to this. With respect to the tree replacement, initially, the district had preferred to use non-native trees, native and non-native trees. They have issues with maintenance and operation of their school. The county condition requires native trees. Those will likely be California live oak trees. Those have issues. They get big. The district's first preference will be to locate these 42 trees on the two campuses. There is likely space on the two campuses for these trees. That just the location has not been finalized. In any case, the location would occur along turf areas, which are mowed, which are clearly not snail habitat, or areas where there is basically bare sand. Again, the district is not going to go out on a limb regarding endangered species. So this plan, the district has agreed to take this plan back to the local committee there, LOCAC, in Los Osos, to discuss where the trees go. If there are some percentage of these trees that go off-site, that will be agreed upon. And most recently, we have agreed to keep Julie Vanderveer of the service involved in these discussions so that they understand where these trees are going and are comfortable. Lastly, the archaeological resources on this site are all disturbed. They were displaced when the road was constructed. It's recognized that they might find shell midden and things like that. That's why the county condition requires a monitor, even for drilling footings for piers and digging holes for trees. So with those issues, I hope we've covered the school district's perspective on this. Of course, we agree with staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Thank you. Just briefly on the tree issue, again, we don't believe there are any habitat issues with respect to the tree removal that may occur here. And then with respect to potential impacts on the tree replacement, we believe the county's conditions are adequate, and with the district's commitment, as indicated on the letter in page 2 of your district director's report, that any potential impacts to endangered Moro shoulder band snail are adequately addressed. Other issues have been addressed here. I would point out that the LCP includes a specific allowance for potential tree removal or trimming to allow solar access. So we believe there's a clear basis here for accommodating what are important alternative energy projects for the school district in a way that's consistent with other coastal resource issues in this area. Thank you.
Commissioners, Commissioner Zanzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't have a question, but
I'll
ask one.
Oh, I thought you had requested to speak.
The issue of 42 trees, could staff
respond to that in terms of whether they would should be on-site or is it acceptable to be off-site?
Yes, I think in this case that's across the two projects, and so the tree removal numbers would be driven by the need to provide adequate solar access for the panels. The trees that will be removed are generally landscaping trees within these parking lot areas, so they don't provide any significant habitat issues. In terms of being on-site or off-site, we believe that they're obviously we'd like to see them on-site, but we think that off-site locations are also consistent with the LCP and that the county is appropriately conditioned it here. Given that they are of a landscaping nature, if they can't be accommodated on-site, it would presumably be to protect a significant resource like snail habitat, so that would be appropriate.
Thank you. Commissioner Mercurimi, then Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission determine and resolve that appeal number A-3-SLO-10-054 does not present a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Coastal Act Section 30603 regarding consistency with the Certified Local Coastal Program, and ask in the affirmative of a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Mercurimi, seconded by Commissioner Reese. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I'll speak on the next motion. There's another motion.
Is there another motion?
There are two separate appeals, and so I do believe we need two separate motions.
Yeah, that's actions. Just two separate appeals. Do you want to? Okay.
Okay. I was going to link it, but I won't. In this regard, I think that staff did a solid job in its analysis here. I am aware that I'm hoping it's more than just a kind of an intimation or a signal that U.S. Fish and Wildlife will be more hands-on and required to be hands-on, if we could so require, which is difficult with the federal agency, to determine the what the protocols are, and I think the presence of any of the area that would certainly be implicated under ESHA, or of course regarding the tree replacement. I'm aware that I think that the only way that we could get to understanding the mitigation further of the conditions that have been articulated well by I think the appellant is by us finding substantial issue, which I don't necessarily believe cuts that standard here today. So this is why that I made the particular motion. And then lastly, I just want to say to the appellants, you have an incurably adorable son, and you're always welcome back. And dog.
Commissioner Reese.
I think that you covered it very well. Thank you.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does appear to me that from the presentation from staff's comments that staff's intention is to require replacement of the trees 2-to-1 and that they be native on-site to the extent, with respect to the on-site, to the extent possible. And it does appear to me that staff is relying on a letter indicating the school district's agreement. However, the letter that is before us is not from the school district. It is on Firma letterhead, who is Mr. David Foote. And there's nothing in this letter that indicates, and there should have been at least a letter from the school district directly, either stating that Mr. Foote was allowed to speak on their behalf and to agree here and now, a letter to that extent, or to state exactly what staff has said with respect to this requirement on the tree replacements, 2-to-1, that they be native and on site. So we cannot place a condition on an item unless it is, unless we do get jurisdiction. And the only way to get jurisdiction is by finding substantial issue. So I am concerned that to that extent, we would be waiving our ability to obligate the school district to comply with this, with what is perceived as an agreement, but may in fact not be legally binding. So I'm concerned about this. This is an important issue. This is something that is directly on point in terms of what has been brought up by the appellant. So I'm prepared to find substantial issue with respect to that. Thank you.
Yes,
you,
Madam Chair.
You wish to respond, and then I have a comment.
Just in terms of your concern, I think Mr. Foote is the legal representative of the district that we've been working with over the past several months, and you know, we're confident that he is speaking on behalf of the district. Although I would agree it would have been good if it had been on the district letterhead, we believe that this represents the district's position, and that we also believe this is a firm commitment through the county conditions that were imposed to achieve what we're concerned about. We do think it's not a substantial issue at this stage, but I understand what you're saying.
And I, too, am going to agree with her concerns, because this is on a landscape architect's letterhead. And while he may be representing the school district, he cannot legally bind the school district. And there are only two ways to bind the school district. Either they would have had a letter in here, or actually three, or we find substantial issue, or we continue it and allow the school district to officially state that they intend to comply with U.S. Fish and Wildlife guidelines, because there is an issue here of what might happen to the Mora shoulder band snail, which is highly endangered. And if you don't work with Fish and Wildlife and do it the replacement properly, you will impact those snails. And I'm not comfortable with this letter that he is, quote, their agent, but he cannot legally bind the school district. Commissioner Mercurimi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you and Commissioner Sanchez make a solid point that, as Mr. Foote had represented, there is an implied trust to his client, the elected school board, but in that particular case, the elected school board could somehow take a contrary position, and that would then require him to follow their particular lead should their particular decision not coincide with the intent that has been represented here today. So even though I made the motion, I would consider putting that motion on pause, if necessary, towards a continuance, unless Mr. Foote wants to come up and tries to assuage us as best as he possibly can that satisfies our particular concerns. If that can happen, then I think there is some merit to the idea of putting this on pause.
Commissioner Blank.
Through the chair, we're acting as lawyers up here, so can we just get an opinion of the council?
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Council?
Some of us. I need just a moment.
Okay. I think we're all making some decisions here that just our staff counsel could answer for us before we make this a longer process.
Thank you. But I do agree that this issue, it does need to be resolved whether this binds the school district in any way.
Madam Chair, while council is looking into that, the conditions that are relevant are the local conditions on Exhibit 1, page 7 and 8, the tree removal conditions, which require which govern how they're removed, and then the replacement condition is on top of page 8, condition number 10. Which requires the 2-to-1 native plantings, and then that those shall be planted on-site or off-site at location in Los Osos, and that's the condition that the district is elaborating on with their commitment to continue working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the placement of those trees.
Are these the conditions that are listed in your staff report, or the conditions I'm looking at, the conditions in the the school district's conditions on tree removal.
The conditions that you would be relying on are the local conditions of the CDP if you found no substantial issue, and those are the conditions I just mentioned on pages 7 and 8 of Exhibit 1.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
In answer to Commissioner Blank's question, from what I understand here, this letter written by David Foote is done so as the legal representative of the district. And as Deputy Director Dr. Lester pointed out, the county does have condition number 10 incorporated into its approval, and that is a enforceable condition, albeit not by us, but it is a legally enforceable condition.
Let me ask you a question. You're saying, because it's not the condition that's written, but it's the additional commitment in the letter is binding on the school district.
I'm saying that the that Mr. Foote is speaking as the legal representative of the school district, and he is stating what the district is stating it's how it's going to implement condition number 10.
All right, thank you. Does that answer everyone's questions? Is there a need for a roll call vote?
Yes.
There's a need for a roll call. Please call the roll. A yes vote is the finding of no substantial issue. A no vote is the finding of substantial issue, and the commission would take this in on appeal. Would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Blank.
Just a minute.
I'm giving you. Staff is asking for a no vote.
Staff is asking for a yes vote.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Yes.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Blank, yes. Commissioner Bloom?
Yes.
Bloom, yes. Commissioner Mercurimi?
Yes.
Mercurimi, yes. Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Mitchell, yes. Commissioner Reese?
Yes.
Reese, yes. Commissioner Sanchez?
No.
Sanchez, no. Commissioner Stone?
Yes.
Stone, yes. Commissioner Zanzi?
Yes.
Zanzi, yes. Chair Wan? Chair Wan?
Yes.
Chair Wan, yes. The vote is 8-1.
Next motion.
I move that the commission determine and resolve that appeal number A-3-SLO-10-055 does not present a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Coastal Act Section 30603 regarding consistency with the Certified Local Coastal Program, and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Mercurimi, seconded by Commissioner Reese. Any objection? Any additional discussion? Any objection to substituting the prior roll call? Seeing none, the commission has found no substantial issue.
That brings us to the North Coast portion of today's agenda. And I note that there are a couple of handouts that were distributed last night and this morning, including the pink district director's addendum, and also the green addendum, which contains one letter on item 12A, the Hohenlooser appeal. If any commissioner needs one, I have extra copies I can give you. The pink addendum contains one permit time extension request for your consideration. We're aware of no opposition or controversy involving this item, and we'd recommend that the commission concur with the staff determination to grant the time extension.
So, I move for concurrence.
I think this is We need a motion for a time extension, do we not?
No.
It's just commission concurrence and executive director's determination.
Okay, any objection to concurrence? Seeing none, the commission has concurred.
There is no consent calendar for North Coast, so that brings us on to item 11A, which is the Humboldt County LCP amendment, HUM MAJ 1-09 for the New Heart Community Church, the certification review. And this item simply involves concurrence with the executive director's determination that the action of Humboldt County to accept the commission's previous certification of the amendment with modifications is adequate. The commission acted on this amendment in September of 2009, and it involves a rezoning and redesignation of a 4.5-acre parcel off of Murray Road in Humboldt County from commercial recreation to public facilities to facilitate the construction of the church. The commission certified it, as I mentioned, with two modifications to ensure internal consistency of the action. On June 9th of last year, the commission extended the expiration date of its approval, and then subsequently the county did adopt the resolutions to accept the modifications and to implement those changes. So we recommend that the commission concur with the determination of the executive director that the county's actions are legally adequate.
Any objections to finding concurrence? Seeing none, the commission has concurred.
That brings us to item 12A, which is the appeal by Commissioners Juan and Sanchez of a decision of Mendocino County to grant a permit with condition to Jörg Hohenlöser for a boundary line adjustment to reconfigure two legal parcels, creating lots of 1.21 and 1.42 acres.
Mr. Merrill, could you wait just a second? I have no speaker slips on this. Is the applicant not present?
I don't know if he's here. He may not be.
Okay. I just wanted, if there are no speaker slips, I wanted you to be aware of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I noted, there is one letter in the green addendum, which is from the applicant's agent, and we're recommending that the commission first determine that the appeal does raise a substantial issue, and then if the commission finds substantial issue, proceed directly to the de novo review, and we're recommending that the commission deny the proposed boundary line adjustment in the de novo action. With respect to the substantial issue, the claims on the appeal are with regard to how the project may not conform to the environmentally sensitive habitat policies of the LCP, including inconsistencies with policies that specifically provide that boundary line adjustments and land divisions need to ensure that there are buildable sites on the property consistent with the ESHA protection policies of the LCP. We're recommending that the commission find that the contentions do raise a substantial issue of conformance with the ESHA protection policies under the project as approved. If there are three or more commissioners that wish to hear a more detailed presentation on substantial issue and take testimony, I'll present a more involved presentation.
Are there three or more commissioners who wish to hear the question on substantial issue? Seeing none, the commission has found substantial issue.
So moving on to the de novo portion of the review, we are recommending, as I stated, that the commission deny the proposed boundary line adjustment as set forth in the staff recommendation. And I'll go quickly through the PowerPoint presentation to just highlight a couple of items. So if you could bring it back up, I'd appreciate it. Do you have the pointer? Thank you. Okay. It may not be working. Could you move to the next slide, please? As I stated, this project's along the southern Mendocino coast near the town of Wallala. Next slide, please. This is a photo from the Coastal Records Project, and as you can see, the northerly parcel is developed with a single-family home. The parcel to the south is undeveloped, and that's the parcel where we have the concerns. Next slide, please. This is an aerial. You can see it's located in a rural residential area where there are scattered homes. It is zoned as rural residential. Next slide, please. This is just a little larger overview of the site, and if we move to slide six, This is the tentative map for the proposed boundary line adjustment. You can see on the left the developed parcel and the outline of the home and the driveway. And you can see the boundary line would change. Where the arrow is about now is the current boundary, and it would essentially move to the south, and the area to in that triangle that's created would then become part of the undeveloped parcel. The diagram also shows the location of various kinds of habitat. The purple is a northern coastal bluff scrub, environmentally sensitive habitat. And then there are also smaller patches of purple in the area that's being pointed to, and also, thank you, up in the proposed driveway access to the site, which are coastal bluff morning glory, which is another sensitive plant that's considered ESHA. And then there, along the existing boundary line, there's a blue crosshatched area that is an existing wetland. The building envelope that's identified for the residents is the hatched area. And as you can see, it actually includes some of the sensitive habitat area, both wetland and coastal morning glory habitat. Next slide, please. I'll go quickly. This is a slide 7, which shows the developed parcel, and slide 8, the next one, are some scenes of the vacant parcel, and it's the grassy areas that you see that contain the coastal bluff morning glory habitat. So if we can move on to slide 9. And as I stated, the principal reason for denial is an inconsistency with LUP policy 3.1-32, which limits land divisions, including lot line adjustments, which are located within ESHA, and does not permit such lot line adjustments if any parcel being created does not have an adequate building site, which would allow for development of the site consistent with LUP policy 3.1-7, which is the basic ESHA buffer policy. The next slides, these two slides, slides 10 and 11, outline policy 3.1-7 and its companion zoning standard 20.496.020, which elaborate how there needs to be buffers established for new development of 100 feet between the habitat and the development. It can be reduced to 50 feet if there are studies done that demonstrate that a reduced buffer is adequate to protect the resources. And these policies also state that only uses that are allowable within the ESHA itself can be allowed within the buffer. Now, neither the proposed lot line adjustment nor the anticipated future residential use that may be proposed on the vacant site are, of course, resource dependent, nor are they types of uses which are allowed within wetlands. And so, therefore, to be consistent with the ESHA buffer protection policies, there'd have to be a building site established that could provide for the necessary buffer. Next slide, please. And this is the same map you looked at earlier, and as this plan was submitted by the applicant's representative, and you can see a couple of dashed lines that go through roughly the middle of the vacant parcel. That's right, that's the 100-foot buffer from the northern coastal bluff scrub habitat, which is the purple area along the bluff edge. And then there's also halfway up to that is a 50-foot buffer. But you'll note that there are no buffers indicated for the habitat that's found elsewhere on the property, neither the wetland or the other incidents of coastal bluff morning glory habitat. And if one were to try to establish that, if you drew the necessary radius around the various habitats, you'd be left with essentially virtually no area that would be left for a building envelope. So therefore, we don't believe it's possible to create a boundary line adjustment with this configuration that would allow for the necessary building site that would avoid ESHA and ESHA buffers. Next slide, please. So in summation, We are recommending denial because there does not appear to be a feasible alternative building envelope that avoids the ESHA. I'd also like to point out that the approval of a boundary line adjustment is discretionary on the part of the approving authority, in that the property owner doesn't have an automatic entitlement to an approval of this kind. if the commission were to deny the boundary line adjustment, it would not deny economic use of the property because the landowner has not yet proposed a residential use. If a residence is proposed in the future, the county or the commission on appeal would have to evaluate whether approval of the proposed home would be necessary to avoid a takings. But that's not before you today. You just simply have the boundary line adjustment, and you need not conduct such an evaluation. Finally, I'd like to just point out that another aspect of the proposed boundary line adjustment that's problematic is that it would actually reduce the area on the vacant parcel that might be available for mitigation should in the future the county or the commission determine that some residential may be appropriate for the site. And so for all those reasons, we believe the proposed boundary line adjustment is not consistent with the LCP, and we're recommending that the commission deny the project as set forth in the written staff recommendation. And the motion to adopt the staff recommendation is found on page 7 of the report. And that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing and close it because I have no speaker slips. And I'm assuming I do not. First I have to go to substantial issue because you combined both.
Well, the commission, I believe,
we
found substantial
find, okay,
issue.
So yes. I'm going to close the public hearing, return to staff. Do you have any additional comments? I would
No, Madam Chair.
Assume no. Commissioner Zanzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given that the applicant didn't avail themselves of the opportunity to consult with Department of Fish and Game on this issue and make it a little bit more clear as to far as the buffer issue, I think I can move with the staff recommendation.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to go back to you for the motion because you can't preface your motion. So if you want to do a motion, you have to do it immediately.
All right.
So I'm going to go to Commissioner Mercurini, just say two words, and I'll go back to Commissioner Zanzi.
It's really been an enjoyable experience the
okay,
last couple of
thank
days.
You.
Thank you.
Okay. Now make your motion.
I move that the commission approve Coastal Development Permit number A1MEN-10-039 for the development proposed by the applicant and request a no.
Move by Commissioner Zanzi. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Mercurini. Do you need to discuss your motion?
Nothing other than I support staff's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioners? Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has denied the permit. I think that concludes today.
Yes, that concludes the agenda. And next month we are in Chula Vista, I believe.
Right. So we'll be down in Chula Vista next month, and we'll see you all then. Thank you. I am remiss. We do have two public comment speaker slips I have. Okay. So before we adjourn, Michelle Grubbs.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to Long Beach also. My name is Michelle Grubbs. I'm the Vice President of the Pacific Merchant Shipping Association. PMSA represents marine terminal operators and ocean carriers that call at the ports of LA and Long Beach. We strongly support the construction of the Gerald Desmond Bridge and recognize that this bridge needs to be built as quickly as possible to protect Southern California's market share in this increasingly global marketplace. Both the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are upgrading their infrastructure in order to compete with the Panama Canal opening in 2014. This bridge is a critical part of this infrastructure, and it has been noted as a bridge of national significance. After over a decade of work, we finally have the funding necessary to move forward. If no other alternatives are viable, and you feel a bike or pedestrian path is the only option, we are supportive of this idea. As long as the bike path and or pedestrian path is added, that it be done in a manner not to jeopardize the progress of building the bridge and the path be safe for all commuters. The Gerald Desmond Bridge is a link to Terminal Island. Terminal Island is a heavily trafficked industrial area filled with many thousands, actually, of trucks, shipyards, oil terminals, a prison, and Coast Guard facilities. while the path that is safe, it might be built for safe, the destination that it's going to is not safe and is very heavily trafficked. So as you consider this item about the bike path on Gerald Desmond Bridge, I urge you to look at the actual destination of Terminal Island and all the traffic, the industrial traffic there. I know you're here. If you have a moment before you leave, I'm sure you're all ready to leave for the weekend. But if you are able to go over, it would give you an idea of what we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Michael Balcom here? All right. That does conclude public comment, and the meeting is adjourned.